Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It is the Anfield Wrap in association with The Athletic and brought to you today by the numbers 5 and 14 as well as the letter K. The Athletic, if you want to sign up, it is theathletic.co.uk/theAnfieldWrap in order to do your partnership. In front of me, I've got Gareth Roberts, Ian Salmon, Andy Heaton. Why the number 5? Because Liverpool kick off against Salzburg at 5:55. Do not get caught slipping on that one. Why the number 14? Because that is the distance between Liverpool and Manchester City in the Football League table as it stands. And why the letter K? Because we're going to be talking a lot about Naby Keita and Andy Heaton. Let's actually start with Naby Keita. He gets on the pitch, and I think people are a bit cynical about Naby Keita excitement, and then there's a lot of people who love Naby Keita excitement. I'd like to think I plough a furrow between the two, but it would be churlish, even though Bournemouth were flat as a pancake, it would be churlish not to be excited by Naby Keita off the back of what he did on Saturday.
Absolutely correct. But another fun fact.
Go on.
What's the 14 thing?
Yep.
Right, you know the gap between Man City and Everton?
15.
15. Hey, there you go.
Okay.
That's a fucking great Liverpool lad. Naby Keita.
14 is also the number on the shirt worn by the greatest human being on the planet at the moment.
The captain himself, we're going to do more on him as well. Naby Keita.
Naby Keita, yeah. Great one. Think he played well. Nice and tidy. All the cliches and stuff. But now hopefully the start of something new. I think it wasn't lost on me that the performance against Bournemouth, as flat as they were, we were dominant. We didn't let them have a sniff. I think with teams sometimes you've got to take advantage of their flatness and not give them a sniff. I don't think we give Bournemouth a sniff whatsoever. I think his performance was encouraging. I think for the second time in a week as well, Liverpool. It's not lost to me that Liverpool's most convincing performances of the last 6 weeks, not saying that Liverpool aren't brilliant, have been when they've rotated and they've given the opposition maybe something to think about. And I think it's hugely encouraging going into the run of fixtures that we have more than two or three strings to our bow. And long may it continue.
Keita, Gareth, firstly, I was interested that he starts predominantly right-hand side. We've seen the manager being quite structured with that. He only really wants to use Henderson off one side. Milner seems to do the left. Genie moves, but if Henderson plays, he seems very focused. Wijnaldum will do the left. Oxlade-Chamberlain's only going to do the right when he's in midfield, although we put him in the left in attack, but he only does the right in midfield. I think it's interesting, firstly, Keita gets to play from the right. Secondly, the partnership with Salah looked really, really promising. Two footballers who understood each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting that Klopp made a point about that, where he said, you know, although they haven't played 500 games together along those lines, you know, there's something there. And he was sort of saying that that's what happens when you put like world-class footballers together. They can. We talked a lot on here in the past about the strength of partnerships and the ideas of understanding between players and stuff like that. One thing I would say for Keita is that, you know, he hasn't set the world alight whilst being at Liverpool. Paid a lot of money for him. We expected a lot. He hasn't delivered a lot so far. He's been really unfortunate with injuries at times. But, you know, I get what you said at the top, that, you know, you can be in a camp where you're like, I'm really excited about those good bits we've seen, or you can be in a camp where you're like, fucking hell, we paid a lot of money and we haven't had much back for it. I mean, it's the sixth time he's completed 90 minutes for Liverpool. But, you know, look, he was good. And I think you've seen it before with him. I remember some of the pre-season games we saw with him. He was really exciting then. And you saw...
Loved playing with Sturridge.
That's what I was going to say. He was, like, links really well. And, you know, the understanding between players was really good straight away. So he's clearly that type of player. He's an intelligent player. He's good. He can link things. He can score goals. And just those moments on Saturday were brilliant, weren't they? You know, the way he finishes the Salah back heel. is lovely, and you know the weight of the ball for Mo as well is lovely again.
Just one, come back on you before I go back over to Andy, Gareth. One of my things about this, people want to say therefore, oh, it's a bit of a flat track thing. Well, the point about this is Liverpool have still got, you know, we've still got
loads of the Premier League's flat track.
Exactly, that's my point. My point is that almost that'll do if we can be picking him home and away against the bottom 10, and he's going to be able to put performances in like that where he just runs the show in their final third. Then, as far as I'm concerned, well, we know we've got lads who can go and win a Champions League. They've done it, so yeah. You know, it is that sort of, this is what we need to do. We need to be putting, you know, to go on with the buffer we've now got to Manchester City and even to Leicester. The flat track games become as important as all the others.
Exactly, but I think as well, now that you're starting to see that, you know, the rest of the league now, they just know that while they're in the same league as Liverpool, they're not. You know, so I think it was Grealish over the weekend was talking about being able to compete with sides, and he sort of went, obviously not Liverpool. And it was like, obviously not, yeah. And it's great if that's starting to... I mean, Bournemouth just were not interested. They didn't try and have a game for me. You know, it was also just like, oh shit, these are a lot better than those. Let's damage limitees from the very start. And Liverpool, you know, were in second or third gear all day.
Andy, there's something about footballers when you see them work with other footballers, and there's something about brains and all that sort of stuff. I go right the way back to watching Robbie Fowler, even when he wasn't in his pomp, by 2001, loved playing with Jari Littmanen. You get Schmeitzer on the pitch at the same time as Littman or Fowler, and there was a wavelength thing, and that's not to disparage anyone else's football and intelligence, but I enjoyed the idea there was a wavelength thing between Keita and Salah. I think Salah makes complete sense to Keita, what he was used to when he was back at Leipzig. Footballers like Timo Werner, who want to live their lives on the shoulder and love a give and go, that's what I think you got to see, and it's interesting that Keita plays off that right and looks that good.
Yeah, I think it was underscored, I think it's been said before, Salah generally looks better when Trent Alexander-Arnold's behind him, and I think that just underlines how important it was for Keita to have a game like that, because obviously Gomez started.
Yeah.
I think that's encouraging, because not to disparage Joe Gomez, actually, we thought had a really positive game. Mm. But yeah, just the intelligence and the feeding off each other, and it's the speed of thought between the two as well. I mean, you can do all these drills and train and one thing and the other, but the confidence between the pair of them, you talk about Salah's back heel to Keita, and Keita buzzing around, and yeah, it's really, after just to reiterate what I said before, just encouraging. But the Trent thing, I think, for me, was massive. And I think it's something that it looks like they've been working on at Melwood. Just the link up between the two and putting them in that position without specific instruction, because you get the impression that Jürgen Klopp likes to have players with a certain degree of freedom, but it's having the trust that he could go out and follow those instructions. Just on the Bournemouth thing and the flat track thing, it occurred to me about 60 minutes in to the game, where it was almost Man City-esque from last season. So you know when, like, Liverpool, you feel like they've got to scrap for everything, they've got to play well to win. I'm not saying we didn't play well, but you get a sense that Liverpool, teams have come to try and give Liverpool a game thinking they can get something. I think we've got in that headspace now with opposition. I think you're exactly right in what you're saying, is the teams are turning up now and going, friggin' hell, just don't
hit. 75% of the ball.
No, exactly. You know,
they weren't interested.
It was kind of like the, you know, not tickle the belly or play dead, but it's almost like, don't hit us too much.
Yeah.
Well, just can I go further back than that? Because as much as it was Man City-esque from last season, it was 1978-79. Because I'm the only person in the room old enough to remember this, but it was like watching the 78-79 Liverpool team play, where nobody was going to be a problem to you at all, and you had this strength in depth right across the 11 players, where there were no weaknesses and everybody was going to contribute. And it's the same thing that's happened all the way through the season. The last team I can remember where every single player scored, I'm fairly sure, was the 78-79 team, and every single player scored that season. And we're doing the same thing again now. It got to a point on Saturday where, for 10 minutes between 60 and 70, I was bored. I was actually watching it and I was bored and I was thinking, this is fantastic. I haven't been this bored watching Liverpool positively in such a long time. There's nothing happening, nothing needs to happen. We don't need to do anything. And we are now at a point where this is the best Liverpool team I've ever seen.
It's just on the idea of a little bit of a sea change, Ian, which I think both Andy and Gareth have separately sort of driven at. It was interesting to me that Liverpool turn up to Bournemouth, and it is only Bournemouth, and Bournemouth do have a habit of doing this, but they turn up to a Bournemouth side who are just almost like, don't hurt us, and we just all want to get out the other side. The same day, City have to deal with Man United, albeit at home, and a Man United side who've got a very, very clear plan as to how they're going to hurt Manchester City. And I think that for much of this season, and certainly for last season, Liverpool were walking into games and there was the idea the opponent was would have a plan. It wouldn't always work, but they would work Liverpool to the max. Yeah. And then sometimes you watch City play and you'd be like, come on, someone have a go. And it's interesting that in the last couple of weeks, the 3-4 weeks, it does begin to feel for the first time like that flip has occurred. That sides are now damage limitation against Liverpool, but you can get at City, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that they've seen what City's defence has fallen apart to become this season, because City don't have a defence any longer of any kind. So people have realised you actually can go towards them and things will happen. I think Andy made a good point before about the rotation that we're suddenly seeing. And it is very suddenly seen, because we've got through the first portion of the season with basically the same 11 lads on the pitch, and some of them getting to the point where they're walking wounded. Salah, as we've all said, hadn't been the same
player. Do you
get
a sense it's by design? It's been
I think it's
for.
Completely by design, yeah. I think it's kind of, he's got a head of steam up and now he can change. I think there's also a little bit of circumstances going, well, you know, Mo has been playing with the injury from the Choudhury tackle for over a month. Andy Robbo was carrying an injury but is still playing. You know, there are clearly little knocks all over the place. But he's now suddenly got to a point where Shaqiri's back and you can use Shaqiri for 90 minutes and then bring him on as a sub for 8 minutes. And he looks, as I said on the post-match show, he looks sharper and slimmer than he did. And against Everton, second half, particularly against Everton, I thought he was going to be pulled at half time.
It's the hair.
But second half, I think it is the hair. I think as soon as you get black hair, he's turned into a mini Diane Lovren at the moment in terms of the sheer, you know, no nonsense, just black hair, got a little bit of beard going on. But we've got that rotation, the fact that you can bring in Chamberlain in two or three separate places. The Keita question, I think it's fantastic. We've got this lad that we bought for 60 million. He's not in your first choice three for midfield. And he's probably not going to be for a while. He might be eventually, but he's probably not going to be for a while. And I love the fact that we've got a lad who costs 60 million that we can come in and use as a flat track bully in the way that for Klopp's first portion, Coutinho was a flat track bully until he starts turning up against the big teams. So Keita can go the same route, and it doesn't matter if it takes 4 or 5 years. He's still young enough to do that, as long as we've got him on the books. At the moment, he's a lad who can we can slot in against the teams lower down, and he's got that vertical running, and he's always looking for the vertical passing. He always wants the ball. He's a midfielder who always wants to be on the ball and always wants to try and make something happen. And if we're using him against the bottom half, and we're beating the bottom half twice a season, we're laughing.
I love that we got to see the Curtis Jones sub as well, because it was like, you know, it's like what you just said, Dee, that, you know, everyone on the pitch, everyone out there, everyone watching knew the game was done and dusted, including Curtis. And so, like, it meant he could go on the pitch stress free and be himself and get some minutes, get his Premier League debut. And he almost.
So you won't
And that's how it used to be. You know what I mean? That's kind of attitude about Liverpool and being able to blood some youngsters across the season. That's how it used to be. But it feels like, you know, I was just saying before on Talking Reds, it feels like in the past when we've gone anywhere or we've challenged for the title, it's been like intensity dialed up to 90 all the time. And so to watch a game like we got on Saturday where, you know, they weren't in top gear, they didn't have to go blood and thunder, they could win the game and then sort of dial it down and ready themselves for Salzburg and bring on a teenage Scouse lad who looked comfortable, who could have scored a goal. If he had scored the goal, I'd still be out. I already love him and I don't even know why it is, but like already I'm Curtis Jones fan club, do you know what I mean? I'm willing him to do well, and it's not just the Scouse thing. You know, he's got a swagger about him, he's got something about him,
he looks like a footballer. He just looks like he belongs in this company.
Yeah, exactly.
The way he's come on the last 2 years to look this much of this convincing as a footballer. I also think if we hadn't had the injury today, I think we'd have seen Harvey Elliott as well.
Because I was excited by the idea he was on the bench.
Harvey Elliott's on for most Beverest. The other one is, if you look at the Rodgers season, we basically make that run with 14 players.
Yeah.
And we're just heads down, 14 players. And as you said, that intensity that we had to go with, the intensity we had to go with last season, we've got more goal scorers than that this season. It's ridiculous.
Did you see the clip of Curtis last week? I think it was the under-23s with Harvey Elliott.
Yeah.
The bromance going on.
Well, there's something in, Andy, this idea that firstly the togetherness that the manager's fostered and the players themselves have fostered, but everyone keeps coming out, and at the minute there's lots of chats about the way it is in training, that everyone's able to just come in and bed in because training is almost as intense, if not as intense, as the games. And I think that, you know, at the moment, if you're Curtis Jones, you've been wowing all season for the under-23s, you know, he scored and been involved in a lot of goals, Curtis Jones, but also then to come and get stuck into these really intense training matches, I think it's a big deal. I think it's something that straight away therefore means if he hits the ground running, but also he feels like he belongs because he's played football with and against these footballers.
Yeah.
It's absolute credit to him, because there was talk of, I mean, people who watched him for the 23s through the over the last 18 months, he plateaued a little bit, and this is my judgment, this is people who actually watched him quite often. And it's been a bit of a turnaround for him, and it's great, and it's a boss little story. I think Gareth's far more eloquent on this kind of stuff than me, but to go from where he was going into the pre-season when there was talk of going out on loan or going somewhere else or even leaving the club, to actually getting on the pitch in a Premier League game is massive, and it does matter. I mean, people joke about, oh, you know, having a scouser on the pitch, blah blah blah, and it's overblown, but it's so encouraging. It's so encouraging to see that pathway, and I think it's massive for the club as a whole to give the opportunities to these kids. So when you talk about, we talk about Manchester City and Liverpool now, and the youth setup and one thing and the other, but there's evidence there now. You look at Trent Alexander-Arnold, you look at Curtis Jones, you look at, I know Javier has only been here 5 minutes, but when you're trying to get the best kids, you can go, look, this exactly, is what you can achieve. This is what's in front of you. Just make the best of it.
The pathway thing is the thing, Gareth, and I bet you that there'll be people at the under-23s, under-18s, as pleased as anybody else to see Jones firstly get on the pitch and secondly not look as though he's out of his depth in any way. And I do think that, you know, you want to talk about pathways there. Forget even the idea of external people, although I completely agree with Andy. I bet your training's got up a notch for the 18s and 23s today, tomorrow. I bet you're absolutely all putting it in.
But also as well, you get the sense that, you know, the players, the senior players, like, they are genuinely together with the kids. I feel like in the past that hasn't always been the case, and like there's maybe like sort of, you know, weird little personal agendas going on or whatever. But I like to think that Shaqiri actually tried to tee him up specifically there, because the game's won, and, you know, I think he's looked up, he saw him, and he thought, be boss to put one on the plate for Curtis. Do you know what I mean? That's how I like to look at it. I might be being a bit romantic, but I like to think of it that way. And you know, it's a shame it didn't go in, but it wasn't an easy chance. But, you know, you do feel that there is genuinely that together. And the idea of, you know, like, you get your chance if you're good enough and all that, and you will get, you know, Klopp will give you a go type of thing. You know, you said it there already, like, if Liverpool are going out and negotiating over the best youngsters in the world, which they will be doing, and they continually try to do, then if they've got evidence of it that they can put on the table and say, there you go, then you're more likely to get them. Whereas you've got someone like, you know, Foden, he's starting to get a bit of a go, isn't he, at City, but he's had to wait a long time, and he's obviously cut a bit of a frustrated figure. You know, there is that question of, well, why'd you go there? Because they've got all these players already and they don't get a go. And, you know, there is all the Sancho chat currently. And it seems like everyone in the Premier League is allegedly interested in them all of a sudden now. And Chelsea are interested because they haven't got a transfer ban anymore and blah, 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 blah. But, you know what? Like, everyone's saying Liverpool are top of the list. Like, Liverpool have got it done. All kinds of stuff like that. It wouldn't surprise me if they have, because right now, why wouldn't you come to Liverpool?
Isn't this from top down? And we've seen this mentioned over and over again over the last two or three seasons, where from the manager, where Mo Salah and Curtis Jones, for an example, or Jordan Henderson, they all get treated exactly the same. So there's no hierarchy there. So they just, I only thought that when you mentioned the Shaqiri thing, you know, there's no like hierarchy where it's like a Ronaldo atmosphere where he's got to be the main man, everyone's got to be put on a plate for him. And I think that's only got to be healthy, and it's so, so encouraging.
But I think that's back to the intensity of training points as well, Andy, where it's a bit like, if you're Shaqiri, you know he's good because he's lived in training. You know he wouldn't be getting on this pitch right now if, you know that he's not there because he's won a competition.
He's
earned it at this point, and it's not even there because Liverpool want to tell the story of a pathway. The manager's bringing him on because he believes in him at this point. And I think, again, that's why, you know, and it is a shame about the Aston Villa away thing, in that I think, again, if you're James Milner, as an example, well, you know how good Curtis Jones is. You've been involved in two football matches where he's played really well, came off the bench in one of them, and he's done really, really well, and you're able to almost carry that back home with you. And it is a shame, isn't it, that, you know, that's probably almost certainly now not going to get to happen again with the Villa game, because they should, you know, there should be the idea of going, actually, next on this, that, you know, that that's part of why players, young players, can settle, is that, for instance, James Milner's going back into the dressing room and saying to everyone, he was good, you know, he's a really good player.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, talking about the intensity of training from this, they are seeing it every single day, because, you know, the Pep Linders, a couple of Pep Linders interviews recently, they've been absolutely revelatory. Revelatory? It's probably the word, isn't it?
Good word.
Yeah, it's a good word, and I can't say it, but it's a good word. it's one of those things where... It's
that's a title for the show box.
Yeah, can't say it, but it's a good word. I had a point, it's gone completely now. Those interviews have shown us that it's not just that a player's earned the right to do it. A player is earning the right to do it every single day. And what they do in training is the actual job. The games are the result of the job. And the attitude that they've got all the way down the line is that you will make your way through if you do the job correctly. So the likes of Milner playing with Curtis Jones, playing with Harvey Elliott, can go, well, I trust these lads. There's, even if you're playing with a half-strength team, then there's an outball.
Look at the Arsenal game in the League Cup.
Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous, isn't it? And obviously the League Cup this time, we're looking at probably Jones, Elliott, Brewster, Nico Williams, and one other whose name I can't remember for life of me, who are going to be playing in that and then flying out the next day. That seems to be the briefing that came out last week. So again, you know, every player that's played with them knows it. And we know from the summer, from the Champions League final, the amount of scenes with Chamberlain and Brewster, and how much we talked about Brewster in the aftermath of that, that there is that togetherness. There's not just it's not an us and them at Melwood any longer. I think there's also, you can drill further down with the pathway, because it's not just a case of we can get the best players in the world. After seeing Saturday's game, every Liverpool supporting 10-year-old who's playing on Buckley Hill or playing out at Geoffrey Humble this week wants to be Curtis Jones, wants to be Trent Alexander-Arnold, because there's a direct path for them to Liverpool. Now they can see that it's doable. You're setting an example that you can do this, you know. It's a fantastic thing to do.
You also get the sense that there's, like, you know, in that Linders interview that you're talking about, the one in The Guardian anyway, you know, he almost talked about that. We've banged on a lot on here, rightly so, about the sort of the culture at the club and where it's at and how hard it is to develop that. And it's now sort of at its peak almost, where, and Linders was touching on this, about the idea that they're not having to go in there and sort of reinvent the wheel every Monday. You know, it's done to an extent, and it sort of takes care of itself. So you've got Lallana, you've got Milner, you've got all these senior pros who week after week, day after day, are going into Melwood, working their asses off, you know, getting stuck in training. It's intense in training. And so if you're Jones or you're Elliot or you're any of the other kids and you're parachuted into the first team training from a different group, because that's what they do, don't they? They take, like, the elite ones and they put them in with the first teams and say, go ahead, see how you get on. And how you'll get on is probably the first time you probably get clattered by Milner, told to get up by Lallana, and you quickly see what the level is. And, you know, you're right, Neil, to say that if that's happening every day and training is as intense as we suspect it is and Linda says it is, then when it comes to playing on the pitch against Bournemouth, who are just trying to keep the score down, you're probably like, this isn't that hard.
Watch it. They've only got Dominic Solanke running around, the rest of them have all stood still.
Yeah.
And I used to play against him anyway. Go on.
And that's why, for everybody in the summer who questioned why you would keep Adam Lallana, apart from the fact that he's bloody great against Everton, that's why you keep Adam Lallana, because he is setting an example to Curtis Jones and to Rian Brewster and to Trent. He's there as the example of what a pro does.
Want to talk about a really interesting little case study across the course of the 90 minutes, Gareth, is Gomez. I think he doesn't do badly at right back, and I think it's really important that we keep saying that. You know, I worry about him being the number one cover to Trent Alexander-Arnold, and the reason why is because we ask so much of Trent Alexander-Arnold, yeah, and it does sort of displace. But it isn't as though, you know, there's Nathaniel Clyne versus Joe Gomez. Well, it's a conversation. Trent Alexander-Arnold versus Joe Gomez, it very much isn't. But I actually just think for himself, I just thought he looked so much more assured and so much calmer and so much more in control at centre-back, yeah, than right-back over the course of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. He looks like, when he's at right back, like, as you say, you know, he didn't do a lot wrong, and he sort of
put a good ball in at one point.
I was going to say, he's very, like, old school right back, almost what right backs used to be, where it was like,
can I get right back?
Yeah, and if they're getting forwards, you know, they can sort of beat a man by just sort of knocking it on the outside and then putting the percentage ball into the box. But we're used to seeing so much more from Trent, because he's got an absolute wand of a foot. He's got great vision, and, you know, as everyone keeps saying, you know, he wouldn't look out of place in midfield. So, to try and like have to meet that standard, you know, it's unrealistic to expect that of him. And as you say, he did put a decent ball in, but also as well, you think about him across his time at Liverpool, and he sort of had this thing all the way of what is he, you know. He's played the other side as well, he's played left fullback, and you know, he had the time where sort of Klopp told him to get rid of his holiday muscles or whatever it was, you know what I mean, and like, you know, so he's bulked up, he's slimmed down, you know, he sort of never really known what he is, and then what he was. And I think this is sort of getting forgotten a little bit. Remember when he had that partnership with Van Dijk and he was fucking brilliant, and the pair of them together, you know, they seemed to love each other, they seemed to really bond, they were doing bits of media together which were really great to watch because you could sense they genuinely liked each other. And at that point you had pundits who've played centre-half at the top level on the telly saying this lad's England's future and all that kind of, you know, stuff. And he's had a bit of a rough time of it. He's had his injuries, he's had his problems, he's struggled for fitness and form. And then he's shifted back out to right back again, and he's getting judged on that. So for me, it was always going to be night and day when you put him back at centre half, because that is what he is. He is a centre half. You can see he's a centre half. He's comfortable there. He's comfortable next to Van Dijk, and he's just always going to be jobbing when he's at right back. And I think we've sort of got to remember that when that happens.
It's one, Andy, where Lovren, we're not quite sure of the fitness status. Obviously, Matip's going to be out for 2 weeks for 3 months. So it's one where you're trying to work out the fitness status, whether or not Gomez starts against Salzburg and then possibly against Watford. I thought there was a lot to build on when he moves to right sided centre back. Listen, he'll have had and will have in the future tougher games, but I just like to see a footballer who's really, really comfortable in his own skin, who knows where he needs to be on the pitch, and I think you see that from Gomez after he moves.
Yeah, no, he's a good option to have. I mean, the Lovren thing, I think I'm not entirely convinced if the game's 0-0, Lovren comes off.
They said it was cramped, didn't
they? Yeah, it looked more precautionary. It didn't look anything. And he didn't go...
He plays on for an odd length of time for a centre-back who's about to come off.
That's what I mean. So they don't do the substitution straight away. It was like a 10-minute thing.
Yeah.
I think Gannett's absolutely spot on. With the Gomez thing, I'm more than happy with him at centre half. I think it's the fact he hasn't played there for so long, you kind of forget just how good he was. I'm just basically padding what Robbo was saying, to be honest. But
isn't the journey of him, you know, in terms of modern centre backs, Andy, and this is where I am with him, you know, when Gareth said before that he's the class he shows. I'm of the view that if we can get him back, because I think he's wobbled this season, if we can get him back, he could be the number one.
I think he's the best. So what I was going to say was, I think he's the best partner on paper for Van Dijk. Out of all of them.
It's like a doctor's surgery.
It's unbelievable how many people are ill in this graph. You're not great. Andy's up the water. All right, don't worry at all. Everyone's going to get through it together. Listeners, but everyone's very much hanging on for dear life at the minute.
Yeah, but you're goose now, aren't you? You're not coming out of this room unscathed.
I think he's the most complimentary partner for Van Dijk, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Matip's had a great season last season. He's come in, not done anything wrong. Lovren's come back in from the cold. Been really impressive. But I think if you're gonna score out of 100 in all the attributes, what's a more complimentary fit for Van Dijk? I would say it's Joe Gomez. I mean, we haven't really seen it since he's come back in, but one of the things that stuck out for me was the amount of cover he gives Van Dijk, and he gives Van Dijk that freedom to be a bit more aggressive and attack. Whereas the other
he's
two,
got that
maybe,
pace on
yeah, exactly, he's got that recovery pace on the side that maybe the other two haven't got. I've got absolutely no worries there. I mean, obviously, there's a question of, you know, if this thing with Lovren is more serious than what they're saying, then we are a little bit thin if Gomez or Van Dijk pick up an injury themselves. And this is the worst time of the season for that kind of thing.
It's okay, there's a window in 3 weeks.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly. But no, they're going to be everything. But yeah, I mean, potentially he could. I think you're absolutely spot on. If he gets a run of 5 or 6 games, we could then be talking about, well, he's the fixture that's got to be moved up the side, which again is healthy.
Going to go back to Gomez when we talk about Salzburg. Before then, though, we're going to talk about Salzburg in a few minutes. Before then, other player I do want to have a chat about performance at the weekend is Jordan Henderson. I think, Ian, he's excellent at the weekend. He's just slotted in at the moment, and you feel as though, I'm not going to say he's reveling in it because I think it's clear where he'd rather play, but he is ever so willing to do a certain job in there. Pulled right a hell of a lot, I felt, against Bournemouth to get himself into a more comfortable position to send the ball. I think he was over there as well because that's where Bournemouth were looking to target, insofar as they were looking to target anywhere. And it's a brilliant ball for the opening goal.
It's fantastic. It is. I think he's coming back to that sitting role where he's obviously going to be for the next couple of months. It's going to be a case of either him or Gini sitting there, basically. I don't think we're going to see a great deal of Lallana playing at number six, no matter how happy I was about Lallana being at the club and being a great player. I don't think you're going to see him as number six very often. So I think Henderson's going to be dropping in there, but I think he's going back to with a different viewpoint because of where he's been playing recently. So the idea of that pulling right to put the ball on, he's putting in balls that we haven't seen him playing for years, and he's putting in with accuracy. The ball for the first goal is absolutely beautiful. I know people are starting to use the phrase long ball, but I'm going to go with the Paisley-esque. There's no such thing as a long pass or a short pass. It's just the right pass.
And you know what? Fuck it. If it's a long ball, who fucking cares?
If it's a long ball, something like that, it's not literally one of their defenders, a Wimbledon long ball.
One of their defenders was interviewed after the game and said it was absolute quality. And of course it was. It was to feet. It was the pace, the vision to spot it.
Perfectly.
All Oxlade-Chamberlain's do is got to put a boot on it.
But this comes into the conversation about, you know, Liverpool, like the derby midweek, teams preparing for what Liverpool are going to do.
Exactly,
and then they're doing something else.
My only little worry, I've got to be honest, is that, like, you know, I'm made up that Liverpool are scoring all different types of goals, and, you know, they've got the threat.
I was honestly getting a bit bored of crosses.
They've got the threat from set piece as well, with, you know, you saw with Van Dijk the other week. But my only little concern, and it's finally starting to kick in, is I watched Leicester yesterday and they're scoring all different types of goals as well. And, you know, Rodgers got a little shout before. Well, Rodgers obviously went through that season with us. He's still got a core of players kicking around at Leicester who actually won the league.
Yeah.
And I just think them bastards aren't going to go away.
I'd be much happier if they were 11 points behind us instead of 8.
So would I. No, so if they could start losing sometime soon, really that'd nice. Be much, yeah.
Brendan? They're annoyingly good, aren't they? I watched them yesterday and did the same thing. These are annoyingly good.
I'm sound with it because I think it's damaging City. Leicester being great is damaging City and bothering City more than it's bothering us.
I think there's an argument around it that it's keeping us very honest.
Yeah,
in that
yeah.
There's no room for any complacency.
But just on the Henderson thing, and I said I wasn't asked. I am asked because it's pissed me off now, this long ball thing. There's a lovely angle, if you see it, of the goal where Henderson looks for the pass. Yeah. The camera's behind the Bournemouth goal. And he gets rolled to him, comes into his feet. And you just see this, and he just looks. And he sees the gap, and he sees the run. And it was almost like a goal you'd score on the PlayStation. Do you know what I mean? You just see the pass over the top and it drops right on his foot. Fuck it, long ball.
You genuinely never played me a FIFA, have you? Yeah, that's not happening.
Pez, fair enough.
He gets on the ball. He attempts 153 passes. Gareth makes 141 of them. There's 12 failures in there. But, you know, that's a remarkable pass percentage rate, 92.2%. Both him and the other thing I like about Henderson, and I think it is related to Keita, I think he's very into the old, where's player X? Looks up, where's Keita? Or where's Salah? You've seen him do it. Like, he decides, this is my go-to guy for the next 10 minutes of the match. The first player he looks for, where is he? Because I'm going to get him on the ball and I trust that he's going to then look after it. And I think you see him make these decisions through the game, Henderson, in a way that I think is a little bit different to a couple of the other midfielders, in that he's very much passing it with information on it. This is what I want you to do next.
Yeah. I mean, there's another ball. I don't know if it was him. I can't remember who it was, but there was a ball to Salah and his control on it was unbelievable. And you know, you saw Origi pull that one out the sky from Lovren brilliantly against Everton. And it's like, you know, it does feel like it's maybe a thing that they've just said, okay, you know, if you want to go longer at times, you know, trust the lads who are up front because they're all brilliant and they've got they're capable of that touch. And, you know, if you're capable of that touch, then, you know, you can ping a ball at them and they'll pull it out the sky and it's on. If you were playing with lesser players, then, you know, they'd need a touch or two, they'd need to shield it, you'd need to get hold of it, and by that time you've got people back and the chance is gone. But we've got brilliant players up front, so if you're putting a ball there for them and they can pull it out the sky, or they can just put a finish on it like Oxlade-Chamberlain did, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. They can play long balls that end up in goals up for the rest of the season. As far as I'm concerned, I don't give it two shits how it ends up in the back of the net. Just make sure it ends up in the back of the net.
100%. And I think as well, just watching it back, I think it's aided and abetted by how wide the fullbacks are as well, because it just stretches the back line. It's no good pumping it. I keep saying long ball, but if the opposition are compressed into a tight area in the box and there's more bodies there, it's more difficult. Whereas,
you're playing percentages then, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you look when that ball comes in from Henderson, going back to the Oxlade-Chamberlain goal, Trent's on one touch. The fullbacks are on opposite touch lines, and the Bournemouth back four are so spread across, and you're creating those spaces. And just to even factor that into the thing, I think that also lends into how the goals have been more spread this year as well, because there's just more space in the gaps, because they're that preoccupied with the Nomalan. I know they didn't play, but people are setting up for Firmino, Salah, Mane, and working on patterns to disrupt them. Whereas you look at the spread of goals, as Ian was saying before, I think there's only two members of the squad haven't. Is that right?
But there's only two who haven't scored in the league. Lovren scored in the Champions League, so there's literally only Joe Gomez of the senior squad and Alisson, and I wouldn't put past him doing that.
The other thing, though, when they can pull it out the sky like they can with that ability, when they've got that skill, is that, you know, you're not getting away with nothing anymore because of VAR. And I think you saw that a few of the games I watched over the weekend, and there's highlights and bits and bobs. You can see centre-halves now where they used to go close to the man and start pushing them and pulling at them. They don't do it now. They stand off them because they just go, fuck, I can't do anything here. You know, VAR is going to do me if I go anywhere near them. And so I think that's a factor as well. So when you're saying before, if he's just trying to pump it into Salah, knowing he's playing well as well, by the way, and knowing that he's, you know, you can see, can't you? You
Salah was brilliant, by the
that's
way.
What I'm saying. So, like, you know, you see the type of game he's having, you see how on it his touches, and you just go, okay, I'm pinging it to him, and he's in the box, and something's likely to happen. I mean, that back heel for Keita is absolute, like, the timing of it is amazing. The fact that he holds it, and then the timing of it, the release in Keita's just there, and the lovely finish as well.
He's nearly done that twice, because that first ball you were talking about where Salah takes it out the air, just kills it down dead, it's then a back heel that Chamberlain nearly runs onto. Just to go back to Henderson a second, when was the last time you saw Henderson step up for a free kick like that? Yeah. That was a cracking free kick.
They all look confident, don't they? They all look confident.
Really thought it's one of the very few times you get to see Henderson play the armband. That I thought late in the game, 3-0 against Bournemouth, it really did look to me like he was like, lads, I'm normally sound as a captain, but this one. I don't think you see him do that sort of stuff very often, but that looked like one of them to me. On Salary, and just dead quick, before we move towards talking in general, the league picture, the one thing that strikes me about his goal is it's the first one this season, I think, that's crept over the line. And I think that's when you can tell he's on it. When he's just, you know, it's like there's been some Salah goals since he's arrived at Liverpool that I'm sort of amazed hit the back of the net, because they just roll into the corner of the goal and you can't believe keepers can't get over to them or anything like that. And that, to me, is the sign that he felt very, very comfortable against Bournemouth, maybe for the first time this season.
He drew him perfectly.
He had every aspect of it nailed, and it was almost like a classic Mo Salah. As I say, the ball trickles over the line, but it was always going in.
Yeah, it's a really casual finish. It's literally the pass into the net. Mm. But it's also the fact that he's passing it across his body against the direction he's running in. Because he is running out towards the left of the goal and he's slotting it into the right-hand corner. So the goalie hasn't got Catenell's chance with that. That's an absolute class goal. The run is absolutely brilliant. And as I think it was yourself said on the pink, it's the same goal that we just seen on Wednesday night from Shaqiri. It's the same diagonal run with that ball, possibly a little more direct because it's Keita's ball from a little deeper than Mane played it on Wednesday. But it's that same, I'm going to put it through these two guys and you're just going to be on the end of it. And it's a perfect goal. I thought Salah was absolutely immaculate at the weekend. It's back to everything that we know he can do. And he looked like he was playing with a little bit of freedom for the first time in, 6 weeks, 2 months? I think the fact that we could actually sit him down during the derby, go, you're not playing, you know, high-intensity game. You're just going to sit on the bench. It's going to be sound. We're not even going to warm you up. And he's benefited so much from that.
And Sadio did that on Saturday. And he's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It's going to open another level somehow.
Yeah.
It's a great time. It's fantastic. The league picture, Andy started it off mentioning 14 points clear of City. Gareth's right to say Leicester look good. They look really good. I think it's something that, you know, Liverpool are 14 points clear of Manchester City and 8 points clear of Leicester because they've been practically perfect. It's only one game where they haven't won, and that would have been perfection. The thing is, they need to stay perfect. It almost feels unfair one way or another, but you feel as though they're up to it and that they're going to want to be perfect.
I'll be honest with you, it kept me up last night. Like, looking at the league, I know we laugh and joke at it, and I'm being entirely serious. This isn't me being joking around.
Didn't you engage with that lad who said he'd done some mad maths or something? DM me if you want to see them.
He DM'd me. And it kettled me.
He's done some mad maths where basically for City to get to 90, they've got to be almost perfect.
Yeah.
And for us to get to 90, we can just go 2 points a game.
Yeah.
And that's crackers that we can now basically
lose
broadly,
four or five and
we
still
can broadly now go with 2 points a game to get off the basis of the fact that, you know, you think about it. If
Ted so, Clark, by the way, thanks, Ted.
It's just well in Ted, it's algebra. So City, we can basically match City's record so far, and City have got to match ours to date, broadly speaking, in order for us to end up on the same points. Which of course, when I say that, it's obvious, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But when you actually read
the numbers, you're like, so we can almost go at a rate of points sort of picking up we haven't gone at for over a season and a half. And now bring that
off. So I mean, this is the state I got myself into last night, in so much as my father-in-law doesn't particularly like football, and I chewed his ear off for the best part of 2.5 hours. About the league table.
That must be the most enjoyable evening he's had in quite a while.
Honestly, like, and then I couldn't sleep last night.
So it is Christmas, and what have you done?
I'll chew my father-in-law's ear off.
I'm absolutely not joking. I struggled to sleep last night because you condition yourself almost to think, nah, not going to happen. And you look at every possible avenue and opportunity to think, this isn't real, this is not real. And then it's there and it's real. And now I'm not making any bold predictions. Well, I kind of am, but
I mean, we're odds on to win the league.
It's what this side have done, and the opportunity they have now is incredible, and I think it's the greatest opportunity that they will ever have.
It's worth pointing out that if Leicester win the next three matches, they're only 2 points behind us. It is worth pointing that out. They've got
no,
Norwich.
That's what I'm not discussing.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they've got Norwich, they've got Manchester City, and then they've got us. And because we don't play, so we would have a game in hand.
But I don't know what I'm going to do. What I'm saying is that I don't know what I'm going to do.
Isn't it best,
if we carry on winning? I don't know what I'm going to do.
Man City do us a favour by beating them.
I mean, I'll take that game on its merits and make my mind up as that wears on. The best thing about that is it actually happens whilst we're becoming champions of the world with a bit of luck. If we can pull that together,
The thing I like about, you know, sort of weighing up where we've been, and what is it now? It's 1-55 or something like that in the league, which is unbelievable. And, you know, we're champions of Europe. Before that, we were in a final. And, you know, this group like grown together to an unbelievable place now. But the thing I like is, you know, there's people who sort of keep these like databases of how like Liverpool are doing and like share the stuff, and fair play to them. And I was looking at one of those this morning. It was on the LFC Reddit, which is worth having a go on, by the way, if you've never had a go. There's loads of Reds on there, and it's good discussion on there, and you might frown about Reddit, but honestly it's on the Liverpool one anyway. So there's a lad on there, and he's doing the thing, you know, comparing the results to last season and all that. And it's boss, because I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I read it this morning, and I was like, okay, so Chelsea away, last season we drew it, this season we've won. Leicester at home, last season we drew it, this season we've won. And like, so we're 6 points, if we continue on the sort of trajectory, if you like, of where we were last season, and remember we got 97 last season, we're already 6 points better off, because the Chelsea result was better, the Leicester result was better. What's the other one? There's another one, isn't there? City,
yeah,
because we drew against City at home. This time we've beat them. Stuff like that just warms your heart, doesn't it?
You look at the league last year. It basically come down to the City Liverpool games, and the worst we can do this season is par, because we've won at Anfield. That's the way that's the worst case scenario there. Fucking hell.
There is. Honestly.
There was another put there.
I've just been sat there looking at the league table and going, okay, well, we're 46 points. Yeah, great. Okay, we've got 22 games. There's another 60. Why shouldn't we get 112?
The broader point I was trying to make is that you condition yourself to think that every misstep that we take will be punished, when the likelihood is Manchester City on current form are just as likely to make more missteps as us.
More likely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's getting into that mindset where you think, fucking hell, what are we going to do? City going to win every game? Well, if you go on the evidence so far, and notwithstanding the incredible run they went on last year, but the evidence in front of you says that they're not going to be perfect the rest of the season, and we just need to chill out a little bit.
Well, I like at two things. One, I saw a lovely stat this morning that says that basically whatever happens now, we're top of the league at Christmas.
Yeah,
we're in the first week of December, we're top of the league at Christmas already. That's really nice. But like Andy, I was wide awake for most of last night, but that was because of the wind that was howling outside our house. But I was lying there thinking, who else is City's first team? We get into our first 11 now.
De Bruyne.
Seriously, De Bruyne. Maybe, well, Aguero, because he puts the ball in the back of the net.
I would go to the end of the earth for Raheem Sterling.
Yeah. Would you put Sterling in the head of Mane, though?
No, but I'd probably play a front three of Mane, Salah and Sterling. Currently, and also because I think Firmino was the one of the front three who hasn't quite managed to get back into shape.
I could make a call for Laporte as the second centre-back, because on form he's excellent, but...
If we're going to do City, they've got a David Silva shape problem at the moment. I thought against Man United he was as anonymous as I've ever seen him, because I think literally it's all right for him to be shattered. He's about 39, for God's sake, and I think for the first time he was looking a bit of his age. Just last little thing on this, Gareth, before we move to Salzburg. The thing that occurred to me when I was thinking about it is, if you're Liverpool manager, start of the season, no balls have been kicked, but you've got all the players back. What do you think the job is you give them? Because I think the job is you give them is just be better than last season.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I don't think Liverpool are going to stop. I think that their internal key performance indicator is better than 97 points.
Yeah. And I think you've seen that, haven't you? You know, there's been times across the season so far where you think, you know, that's a solid enough draw. And you've seen the manager and the players collectively going, we don't just want draws anymore. Draws, you know, cost us. So we've got to win. And, like, you know, the only points they've dropped are at Old Trafford. And, you know, you can make a good case that we were hard done to that day by their goal. There's a collective mindset there that they're winning every game, I think. And, you know, I think to quickly tell the story, like, we've mentioned Sam Walker-Dine on here before. He's our graphics and video fella. He's an Arsenal fan, and the only thing he still clings to this day is, yeah, but the Invincibles. And he's got a little card on his wall next to his desk, so it's there every time we come in. Sam, we're coming for you, lad. Like, if we end up with that gold trophy, what have you got left, lad? Do you know what I mean?
Just on that, I think the 97 point thing is interesting. I think they might have been told to match it only because psychologically they've done it, they've achieved that.
I've got to a Champions League final, yeah, 97 points, and you know it. You can do 97 Lads, points in a Champions
League
final.
I'm not asking for the world, you've done it.
Yeah,
just match that and see where we end up. And I think that's what they're heading towards. And it's
the 6 points up.
I'm a six. No, we are. We're 6 points up already. Fucking hell.
Okay, we're going to go back in 1 second to talk about Salzburg, but we're talking about something pertaining to Salzburg is going to get dropped in now as an insert. So we're going to do live commentary on the Salzburg game, John.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's been something that we've been asked, like, when we've said to, you know, Anfield Rep subscribers or listeners or whatever, or viewers now, when people say, well, we'd like us to do more, they said, oh, we don't like our commentators. And, you know, naming no names.
No. Nope.
Or indeed countries.
No.
Nope. And I'm sure they're very popular amongst other people wherever they live. But certain people have said to us, we'd love to have your dulcet tones commentating.
I think this is a naive error, to be honest. But we are where we are, and that people would like it. And there's a company who got in touch with us called Hot Mic, and they are at Hot Mic Inc. So the word hot, the word mic, not like the first name, but MIC as in microphone, and Inc as in incorporated, INC. So Hot Mic Inc got in touch with us and said that they've got this thing where they've got an app, but it's only on Apple at the minute, although it is being beta tested on Android, and we are early adopters. Do you feel like an early adopter?
I think this is going to be the very first soccer game they've ever done. They're doing a lot of NFL.
Really?
Yeah, they're doing.
You might do something with an Arsenal crew. Oh, you know.
Let's pretend that's not true.
Okay, let's pretend that's not true. This is the first thing that they've ever done, and you can download their app on Apple at the minute, and it is in. If you go onto their Twitter, you can see it on Android in beta form. I'm not quite sure if our thing's going to come off on that, but it will definitely be on Apple, and it's hotmic.io. Hotmic.io, and they are at them on Twitter, and there's also there for us as well, and info at hotmic.io if you want to know more about it. But you can download an app, and what it will do is it will sync between you and it will sync our words to the television, and the commentary should come out in real time with me and John sat somewhere in a boozer in Liverpool watching Salzburg versus Liverpool. And we picked Salzburg versus Liverpool because I said, well, it'll be a good test and it'll be a good run through because it'll be a dead rubber, and that's not true either.
So listen to me and Neil have a breakdown at any point if it looks possible that we might be playing Europa League football this season.
Honestly, I'm genuinely, like, I can't believe this has happened to us, but I am really excited about doing it, and I don't know if we're going to be any good at commentary at all, really. What do you think?
I think it'll be good. Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to it. I'm realising now that I know three Salzburg players.
I've got a stat packed on by one of the lads who came in on work experience last week.
Excellent. Yeah. Putting these lads to use. Good to know. Yeah, so we'll have to have a little sheet in front of us. Maybe Clive Tilsley will knock something up.
Thanks, Matty. It was great. It's really good what Matty's done. I mean, he's not done it with like Clive's lovely penmanship, and I don't trust my penmanship at all. Colours
and all that, yeah. I mean, maybe we shouldn't tell Clive, actually. You might think I'll hear some other pricks after my job.
I don't want to tell Clive. Certainly not until we know if it's any good.
Any good.
Yeah, not until we know if it's any good or not.
I think you'll be fine, Clive.
Yeah, I think Clive's fine at being Clive, and Clive should be getting more gigs, to be quite honest with you.
Maybe that makes the future for him as well.
For all of us. So, yeah, we want you to check it out, and we want you to enjoy it, and enjoy it with us. And there's a really weird thing with the Anfield Rap. I don't know if any of you have seen the thing I did on the stage in Edinburgh as part of the Touring Fest, but I have this thing that with the Anfield Rap, it's probably just best that we do stuff and then worry about whether or not it's any good later. And when I was having a chat with the Hot Mic lads while you were away, John, and one of the things that I was saying was, you know, so we'll do it, and then, you know, we'll work out what it felt like and whether or not it's, you know, when we'll look into it and we'll think about it. And he was like, so what sort of numbers are you thinking? And I said, I'm not really thinking about the numbers, mate. What I'm thinking about is whether or not it was any good, because we'll just do it and we won't know whether or not it's any good until we do it. And so I'm really looking forward to that. Like, I love a step off into the unknown. I'm constantly Indiana Jones in Last Crusade, stepping forward onto the path that no one can see.
So were they asking for numbers in terms of how many we were going to do after this?
No, numbers in terms of like what would be a good marker for listeners. And I was like, I don't care if it's only three. As long as me and John had a nice time.
So if you're listening, if you could be one of those three,
that'd be perfect.
Yeah, that'd be good. No, we are looking forward to it. And I think to reiterate what Neil says, that the key to this and why it works so well is it does sync with your TV. And so obviously we're all going to be watching these games in different places and on different formats, and you know, either streams or you know live means live is a curious concept now, isn't it? It can mean anything up to a minute delay, so it does, it sync up perfectly with your telly. It listens to it and it kind of gauges where it's at and then syncs up with that, so we will be commentating completely in sync with whatever you're watching, and I am looking forward to it. Yep. I think it'll be fun. It'll be something different
So if you've got any issues with it, they are at Hot Mic Inc. on Twitter. Don't at our Twitter. Our Twitter's got enough going on. So at Hot Mic Inc. and they will be able to help you there. And it's info@hotmic.io. And if you go on the App Store now on Apple, it'll be there for you. And there is on their Twitter Android users beta stuff. And I don't know if that'll apply to us, but with a bit of luck, it will. That's everything you need. Come and enjoy it with us. And the other thing we've got to talk about, John, is that for people who don't subscribe to the Anfield app at the moment, if they download the app, they will be able to watch all of our post-match video and listen to our post-match audio after Watford, and that is a big deal. So that will be for free for people over the Christmas period post Watford. If you haven't got the app at the moment, you can download it and it will be available for free. The audio of the post-match show of the Pink after Watford and the video of the post-match pint.
What a festive treat
indeed
for everyone. How generous we are.
It's like Christmas night out, you know, after Watford.
I mean, we've got our own Christmas night
our
out
work
before
one,
Watford.
Yeah.
So are you taking it easy for that, or are you planning on just like ploughing through? Okay, yeah, I did suspect that would be the case.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd just check.
I've got the election Thursday, and then that Friday, but Watford is like, because I'm going to Qatar, which I'm really lucky and I'm pleased about, and there's going to be more on us going to Qatar coming up soon, but it's like I'm not really getting to, like, Christmas then just sort of happens, I haven't got any other sort of, like, because Qatar will be a massive Christmas night out watching that, and Man City Leicester's on at the same time, and everyone get to go and do that. So I've sorted, like, I've got my card marked for Watford at home. As I mean, I'll be in bed by 8:30. I mean, don't get carried away. But as part of this, all post-match content on the Anfield app will be free if people download the app.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, we're really nailing the post-match stuff at the moment, so that's why it's really cool that lots more people will get to listen to it. We did a recent survey with our subscribers, and you know, it was really, really positive, and people, you know, love what we're doing, which is great. You know, 99% say they'd recommend to a fellow Liverpool fan and all that, which is all brilliant stuff. But
start doing it as much as you can, please.
But the stuff that, you know, really kind of, you know, tested the best was the post-match stuff, you know, getting amazing kind of ratings and people just loving it. And so the video, the guys there have done a brilliant job in terms of, you know, what the product kind of what's been created there, and the audio. We've moved recently. We've gone from Hotel Tier, which is where the video is, to our home in the Glenbrook, and that's been great because it's happening there. And so if you can't get to a pub after the game in Watford, you know, we'll take you there, and we're right in amongst it. And you know, Andy does a great job on the sound, so you can hear everyone loud and clear. But also, you know, if the song's starting in the back, you'll hear them too. And so the great. Hopefully, Lizzie's put a good lineup together. You know, all. Killer no filler,
absolutely.
Stellar only 4 years, and enjoy it. And if it's for you and you want more of that, then obviously it's a great time to subscribe, because you might have noticed the games come thick and fast after Watford. I mean, the 7 the week after.
It's absolutely unbelievable. So do have a think about it, but do download the app and be able to both listen and watch this, see what it's all about, and see if you want this to be part of your life. It is the Anfield app. Do download the app. That's from John Killer Gibbons, Neil Filler Atkinson. Back to Talk Salzburg, and for all of our bonhomie, all of our excitement, Ian, it is perfectly legitimate to be hugely concerned about this game. I think this is a Liverpool side that looks in great shape, but there's every chance this is a really mad game of football against Salzburg.
I was really enjoying myself until you said that. I was having a great time here. We were talking before we came on about the last Salzburg game and remembering the flow of it, and the fact that, you know, a 3-0... I'm trying to remember exactly what happens for their first goal, but we kind of let them into the game. And then for 15 minutes, we come out second half, and we kind of take our foot off the gas, and they come out in this way that you don't expect a team who's 3-1 down at half-time to come out. And they put in this absolutely mental 20 minutes of football, and suddenly they're on par. And then we went, oh, do you know what, sod this for a game of soldiers, and took them again. And it was always there that we could take them. So I don't think... They are clearly... An odd team. They're an exciting, slightly mad team when they put their mind to it. They're scoring a lot of goals, and they've got a lad up front who knows where the back of the net is three times per game repeatedly at the moment. But I think we've got enough for them. I think we know from the last game what not to do this time, and that is not get complacent with them.
I'm not concerned in the slightest.
You're not?
No.
Why not?
No. Because I think if you go back to the pink show after the Salzburg, I was furious, if you remember.
Yeah.
Because Liverpool switched off.
Yeah.
I don't know they scored 3 goals, but that's because Liverpool switched off. And yeah. We got complacent and we got punished for it. And I think the one thing you say about the Liverpool side, when the chips are down, they don't fuck about. They don't fuck about. And we're miles better than them. We are miles better than them. We're absolutely fine.
Do you not think though, Andy, and my point about this is that if I'm Salzburg, what I want is I want a game with 7 goals in it. That you'd almost go into the game and think, we turn this into a game of tennis, well, we just make it crazy. And I think they've got the capability to do that, and that's why I'm concerned. I'm not concerned because I think Liverpool will play the better football for 90 minutes, but you know, this is a side whose games are averaging an unbelievably high expected goals at both ends of the pitch.
But yeah, you say that, but I think that the benefit, and I know we've just covered the Bournemouth game, but I think the benefit of the clean sheet at the weekend coming to effect. One of the niggling worries I've had is that we've not been able to keep a clean sheet. We've now got that one in the bank, and I know it's a different competition. If we're on it, we're miles better than them, and we'll put it to bed. I can actually see a comfortable 3-4 goal victory for Liverpool. That isn't me being arrogant.
I'm intrigued.
I just think when it comes down to decisive moments, I think we're okay. I think that we were comfortably 3-0. It wasn't an undeserved 3-0 lead.
Oh, no. That first half was one of the best first halves I've seen in years.
And then when it was in the balance, we went up and Mo scored, and we get the win. And there's always the thing with, oh, well, you know, there's always the next game and the next game. There isn't a next game after this one. We need to avoid defeat. And I think the best way to avoid defeat is not to play for a draw. It's to play well and play and win. I think we'll be absolutely fine. And you know what? If the worst comes to the worst, and we go out, well,
you know, we're in the Europa League, and that's fucking a pain in the arse.
Yeah, play the kid. play the kids. Just disregard it. Just absolutely disregard the Europa League and concentrate on the league. But it won't happen because we'll be fine.
Yeah, I can't go for the worst comes to the worst, because I want to win both this season.
Gareth.
I thought they were a lot better than I thought they were going to be, to be at Anfield. And, you know, Hwang, absolutely...
He's a good player, isn't he?
He was quality, yeah, and he absolutely roasted.
Minamoto, forget the massive lads up front. They were the two that worry me.
Yeah, them two were great. And like, they had you know, the confidence they played with at Anfield. I thought, you know, you can't sort of just go, oh, we'll brush these aside, because they played some quality football there. And, you know, he's the only fella I've seen to absolutely roast Van Dijk on that goal. Van Dijk's flapping in the wind, and you know, he's gone round him and he's put it in the back of the net. And Inamoto, yeah, was the other lad, looks absolutely brilliant. The pair of them wouldn't be out of place in the Premier League. And then you've got Haaland as well, who you're on about here, and whose goal scoring record's brilliant. And look, it's easy to say that they're playing in some jag league, and you know, the opposition they're playing is not that good. They've been doing well in the Champions League. Yeah. They've been hitting decent heights in the Champions League, and so I don't think we can. I think Liverpool go there professionally, though. Liverpool know where they're at, you know, it is shit or bust to an extent. A draw does us, but you know, I'm with you that you can't sort of go there and play for a draw. Just go and be the best version of Liverpool, and if you're the best version of Liverpool, you probably win. But I reckon it's got the potential to be bananas. I reckon it's got the potential. You know, they'll be banged.
It's the biggest game of their lives.
Yeah,
it's the biggest game that stadium's ever seen, and it's the biggest game of their lives. This is a World Cup final for these footballers. And also, the other thing to remember is even if we get well ahead in the game, they're all playing for moves. They know that this is all the stepping stones.
I was just about to say, there's four or five of them there who are already being linked with big moves to the Premier League. I think Haaland's got like a relatively low clause in his contract,
18 million apparently.
Yeah, so there you go. So he knows that if he turns it on in a game like this, that everyone comes hunting for him, and then all of a sudden he's got a bumper contract and he's made for life. The same for Hwang. The same for, I think there's a lad, there's another lad in midfield who's decent as well. There's a few of them, and look, you know, they'll be on it, the crowds will be up for it. So yeah, it'll be tough, and we should have had it done by now, you know. I got loads of people saying, have you got shares in the markets there, the amount of times you mentioned them on shows. But being pointed around the markets, was it was supposed to be a nice stroll around the markets, nice Crimbo trip to Austria and all that. And as it is, it's turned out being a little bit stressful.
You can't, don't be dwelling in the markets. If you're listening to this, don't be taking your time. There's a football match to deal with. The markets are now secondary. The markets were a big deal, but they're now secondary. Yeah. So is the chocolate and the Mozart connection. It's secondary to the other things.
See, I take all that, and I'm not underestimating Salzburg, but I think you can kind of trick yourself sometimes. We're the best team in Europe.
I know, we are the best team in Europe.
We're the best team in Europe.
Yep.
And you know, I think what happened at the Anfield, has kind of skewed things a little bit. We should be.
I think that a roulette spin, the bandy.
But no, I understand the.
We got beat in Napoli. We got beat by Red Star.
You talk about. No, that's fine. But when it's on. No, of course it can. But when it's on the line, we generally do it. And you talk about the opportunity that it's in front of Salzburg, the biggest game of their lives, whatever. That can actually be counterproductive.
Of course it can. Yeah, I understand that.
That can be counterproductive. And I just think it's a game where if Liverpool get a 1 or 2 goal foothold, it's a game that we can manage and manage well. As we did the other weekend.
Yes and no in that. The thing about Bournemouth is Bournemouth have played Liverpool at home 63 times by now, and all those players have. My thing about this game, and that this reason why I think, you know, we're 2-0 up with 10 to go, it is not done. We are 2-0 up with 5 to go, it is not done. And I think we can say, oh, this Liverpool side can manage this. So, yeah, and that's what you turn it into. And that's my thing with them is they're a roulette spin. I think if Liverpool play this game 10 times, Liverpool win it 7. Maybe even win at 8. One's a draw and one's a defeat, if you know what I mean. And I'm happy with that, but my point is there's a 1 in 10 here. I'm with Gareth in that. We shouldn't have got to this stage. It shouldn't have turned into this.
But also,
I just think on it, it is not a straightforward one, because they will, all the way through, we've seen they've got a mad 10 in them. And I think a mad 10 can, you know, the mad 10, they could play really well, not stick the ball in the back of the net, and we get 2 on the counter break to their breaks, if you know what I mean. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. My thing is more, they are more capable than most of the teams we play most seasons of turning it into a roll of the dice. That's what concerns me. And is the dice loads in our favour? Absolutely. But they can turn it into a roll of the dice.
It is. It's genuinely a worrying thing. I'd be a lot happier with life if we're basically sending the kids out there tomorrow night. Because it would mean the Napoli job had been done properly and we were through and we didn't have to worry about anything at all and it was complete dead rubber. I think it's one of those where if you send... Well, it's obviously the first choice 11 going out there tomorrow night, but send them out with the knowledge that, see these lads here, this is the biggest game they've ever played and they're going to make it hard for you. Just, you know,
It's definitely, but and I also agree with what Andy's about to say, which is, and also we could just be 3-0 up after half an hour, and they could be shattered, and then all the emotion then works against them. That's fine.
Because we love a game where somebody gives us space to play because they run that.
I'd be more worried if it was a more conservative opposition. So what terrifies the life out of me in these type of games is 0-0 with 5 to go.
I
can't imagine a situation where it's 0-0 with 5 to go.
What lifts me is that we saved Sadio for this. And he's been absolutely brilliant. And I think his will, his spirit, and the way he's playing currently, he can just dictate that Liverpool are winning. You know what I mean? He can dictate that Liverpool are coming at you, we're going for you, and all the best with coping with it. And like, I think, you know, letting him have his feet up against Bournemouth and putting him out on Tuesday.
And getting Mo back into form as well.
Yeah. I think, you know.
And the goalie's back as well.
Yeah.
Champions League final 11.
It probably will be, won't it?
With whoever plays centre back.
Yeah, it probably will be, won't it? I mean, you suspect. I don't know. We don't know.
Can't be Fabinho.
We don't know about Lovren, do we? I mean, the last we heard is Klopp's comments, and he was saying he thought it was camp, and he didn't think it was that bad. But yeah, so there's a question mark there. Yeah, Fabinho, you can't. So you haven't got your Champions League 11, but it's basically the trusted side, isn't it? Pretty much that he's going to put out, I think.
So you think it'll be Lovren if fit, Oxlade Chamberlain? Is that what we all think? We all think Lovren is fit and Oxlade Chamberlain, or do we think he'll go with Milner, or do we think he might throw Keita in? What do you think he does in midfield?
I think he'll go with Milner, but I'd like to see him go with Keita instead. I think Henderson and Wijnaldum are absolutely locked on, aren't they? So
you're surprised to do Keita again?
I'd be surprised, but I'd like to see it happen. Because I think it's the kind of game where you could play.
It's Milner, isn't he? He's the grown-up. I think it's a game where you need your grown-ups.
Milner.
Yeah.
And Lovren if fit, yeah. And Gomez if not. All right, then. There you go. Easy, Jürgen. Don't know why you're worried about this. What's he get paid for? all right. Fantastic stuff across the board. Thank you to everyone on the show this week. Oh, by the way, we're going to go through?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Comfortably.
Thank you to everyone on the show this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. We have been in association with The Athletic. It is theathletic.co.uk/TheAnfield Wrap if you want to sign up and read all the fantastic writing on there. Loads and loads of bits and pieces. So do take the opportunity if you fancy that. And there's loads of reductions on there as well. You can tell I've not got them written down in front of me when I say there's loads of reductions. You'll sort it. Backing you to the hilt. Thank you very much to Gareth, to Ian, to Andy. It's been The Anfield Wrap this week. Liverpool 14 points clear of Manchester City, 8 points clear of Leicester. They're good. Podcast Network.